Hello, friends, and welcome to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
How are you today, my friend?
I'm living large, thank you. It's March. I feel like spring is around the corner. All is well.
Yes. We normally we would like to have recorded before the end of the previous month, but it was a short month. It snuck up on our asses.
We're busy girls.
We're busy girls. We've got things to do. We've got places to be. But we are here now. And, we're sticking to our planned sched. So I'm very proud of us. How was February for you in terms of reading?
February was so fucking busy for me, and I'm going to tell you why. As you know, I am a lady author and I also have a full-time job. But in February, I cut it right back to 2 days a week and I got loads of freelance. And the thing with freelance is that you have to fucking do it. And I was not expecting every pitch to land. So I have worked so hard this month. A lot of my reading has been related to jobs that I've taken on. So I only read in full two novels. But then I call it revisit. Like I kind of spent at least a day rereading, flicking through, kind of reacquainting myself with a book I'd already read but had to be fresh for an event. So I'm going to talk about those as well. I hope that doesn't feel like cheating, but I think that will be fun.
Nothing's cheating. This is just, this is meant to be an honest reflection of our month in reading.
And I think it's a good demonstration as to why my reading has nosedived in theory when I share like what I read this month. It looks like I've not been reading as much, but I'm reading every day. I'm reading loads. It's just, I'm not necessarily finishing everything I'm picking up. I'm flicking through. And I do have one book that I read half of and abandoned. And I wouldn't normally share things like that, but I'm feeling loose. I'm going to talk about it.
And also, I know what it is, and I think it's really interesting to talk about.
But before we get into that, how has your reading month been?
Well, I had a bit of a slower reading month because I don't know if you heard, if you saw it, maybe like I mentioned it once or twice on my social media. But I went to Mexico.
What the fuck?
Mexico,
You
Mexico.
dark horse, you kept
I
that
know.
quiet.
I actually kept it really quiet. You would not have known that I was on holiday and definitely wouldn't have known that I was in Mexico.
Just to be clear, for anyone who doesn't follow Bethany on Instagram, the stories, it was like a trail of ants.
Yeah, I try. No, I refute that accusation because I was so careful never to let it get into Trail of Ants on the screen territory. I was like, there has to be at least like 2 millimeters of line on the story thing. We can't get into little dots.
We're not story maxing.
Yeah, exactly. So mindful. So yes, I went to Mexico, which is not the kind of Mexico holiday that I was having. Was not like a chilling on the beach Mexico holiday. It was a like stomp, 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 be out all day, every day Mexico holiday. So I did not read as much this month as I did last month, but I still read a decent amount. So three, four. Since we last recorded, I've read eight books. Not too shabby.
That's nice. I've got six to talk about, so we're a bit more balanced this time.
Exactly. So shall I just kick us off?
Yeah, let's dive right in.
So I'll kick us off with a book that I actually read at the end of January, but because we recorded before the end of January, I don't want it to fall through the cracks just because it didn't line up with our recording schedule because I thought it was so fucking good. May We Feed the King by Rebecca Perry.
I was talking about
So
that book
great.
just last night that
With
you
someone from Granta.
with the editor from
Oh,
Granta,
that's so nice. I
Dan
didn't.
Baird.
We went to a soiree, to the same soiree last night for our friend Oren's birthday. Hence the reference to talking to people about books last night. I did not know that he was the editor. That's so nice. I should have told him how much I enjoyed this book.
Don't worry, I did.
Okay, gets. So May We Feed the King is the debut novel by Rebecca Perry, who I think is like the nicest, coolest person in the world anyway. But it's really cool. Like you might have seen like it's got a really atmospheric looking dark cover with like pears. A painting of pears. So it's very interesting. It is told from the perspective of a person who I had not noticed, and actually Rebecca had not noticed until a reviewer commented on it, is not just nameless, but genderless. But we both assumed that, well, Rebecca said, always thought of her as a woman. Anyway, so I will read you the synopsis. She is a curator who spends her time dressing the rooms of historic buildings to bring them to life. But in the lush private quarters of a medieval palace, she finds herself so transfixed by the reign of an almost forgotten king that the edges of her life begin to blur. He is a reluctant ruler with no hunger for power, rushed to the throne after the untimely deaths of his older brothers. But it isn't long before whispers begin to fly around the court. And with the growing belief that the king is not fit for the throne comes the idea that another might rule in his stead. May We Feed the King dances between the lives of a historical subject who risks the future of his kingdom and a woman who turns to the past to hide from her present. Laced with desire and longing, it is a playful, stirring meditation on history and storytelling, on what makes a king great and a life meaningful. It's just really juicy and a really intriguing, unusual kind of book, and I absolutely loved it. And I think Rebecca Perry is cool. So that was my first read.
My goal is on the next episode of the podcast, I will also have read this book.
I think you would like it. It really, I found it really quite gripping and intriguing. Tell me what you've been reading.
Okay, so the first book on my list is a book called He's the Devil by Toby Coventry. I read this at the end of last year. It is out now, and I had the absolute honor of interviewing Toby for his first event, which was at Waterstones Islington this month. So I reread most of the book. I didn't reread all of it, but it's incredible. It's like a very kind of schlocky horror novel about a kind of self-described good boy, a nice man, a nice sweet man, who at the beginning of the book, his roommate has moved out unexpectedly. There's been some kind of beef. Roommate has gone and just found a replacement without consulting him at all. And this new dude increasingly seems like he may be possessed by some kind of demon. It is diabolical, it's queer, it's fun, it has such a brilliant texture to it. I absolutely loved it. I loved interviewing Toby. And I think, who was it now? I think Phil Ellis, PJ Ellis, the writer, described it as like dream demon twink material.
Yeah.
Remember the demon
Yeah,
twink?
no, like it literally to me sounds like Come Closer by Sarah Grand meets The Demon Twink.
That is exactly that. Sorry, I just coughed. I muted, but I shouldn't have unmuted so quickly. And yeah, that is exactly the vibe. Like it really reminded me of Come Closer, but it's camper.
Yeah.
Like it has a kind of a streak of humor in it, while also having some real darkness as well. I think Jodie Harsh described it as the love child of a Tessa Mosch Fegg and John Waters.
Okay, gorge. Yeah, love it. I'm in. Count me in. So the next thing I read, which I'd actually started reading last year and then just forgot I was reading and moved on to other things, I finished reading in Mexico, was I Regret Almost Everything by Keith McNally, which is a memoir of the restaurant guy, Keith McNally, who, like Balthazar, Pastis and like the Minetta Tavern, places like that in New York. He was the inventor of all of the, like, he basically invented a new kind of like New York dining experience. But crucially, he also just had a really interesting life. And then a few years ago, he had a stroke, which has left him essentially like permanently disabled. But his whole life was like, has been completely fascinating. He's still alive. Like, obviously, he wrote this memoir that came out last year, and he's a really, really good writer. And it's just really juicy, very gossipy, very fun. My only criticism is that he like loves Woody Allen, and not in the way that like I also enjoy the film Annie Hall, but like does proper like Woody Allen sex crime apologism. Yeah, which is kind of nasty. You may remember this guy from Instagram when, do you remember the whole beef over James Corden being rude to people in a restaurant?
No.
So he like Keith McNally like called out James Corden for being badly behaved in one of his restaurants. So he's like not afraid to be doing some shit all the time. But sometimes someone who will be doing shit all the time will also be defending Woody Allen.
That
So
is
that's my
disappointing.
critique of this book. So that's, and I've just been on the Waterstones listing for this book, and the first two people that they've got as like media reviews recommendations for it are Michael Gove and Piers Morgan. So,
Oh.
yeah, it's
Okay.
a fun book, but he may also be a freak.
Sorry to hear it.
Yeah. What was your next read?
Okay, so my next one was another event reread. It was Greedy by Callie Kazumi. This one, first of all, so this is Callie's second novel. Her debut was called Cuckoo in the UK or Claire Darling in the US. And Cuckoo, I absolutely loved. It's like, it reminded me of, do you remember in like 2015-ish when we had that kind of absolute golden run of incredible thrillers that were like very,
Domestic noir.
yeah, domestic noir. It is Cuckoo is of that kind of breed, and it's an exquisite example of it. The plot genuinely took me by surprise, and I had a really good time with it. Greedy is very different, though. Greedy introduces this guy called Ed. His name is Ed Cook. He is a chef, and he's in a lot of trouble. He's living in Japan. He's got a gambling problem. Shit's going south fast. He sees an advert for a job that's like essentially this reclusive billionaire needs a private chef. Ed is not qualified for this role. Like, she has really exotic taste. She has a very fine taste. He's not really qualified, but he gets the job. So he basically spends his whole time clattering around in his massive kitchen, trying to like figure out what the fuck to do. However, and this is not a spoiler, you are meant to figure this out really early. The tagline on the book is not suitable for vegetarians. This billionaire has a very specific interest in unusual meat. And of course, that includes
The
matters
human.
of the human form. So it's a cannibalism novel, but just very fun, fresh, original. It looks a lot at like kind of the class structure in Japan. And there's some amazing food descriptions and also some absolutely vile food descriptions as well. I just think it's a really fun book, especially when we're in an era where I feel like you cannot swing a tit without hitting a cannibal novel.
So
This one.
true, bestie.
This one is there's something really different about this one. It's special.
Okay, intriguing. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So my next read was one of two novels I read, sorry, one of two books, because they ain't novels, that I read this month by the same person. You may remember we had extended discussions on the last episode about how we're not going to climb Mount Everest off the back of me reading Into Thin Air by Jon Krakauer. I just like gone on my library app, my Libby app, and been like, just tell me when I can read some Jon Krakauer books. And then two came through in February. And so I've read Into the Wild and Under the Banner of Heaven. So Into the Wild was also turned into a film.
I was about to ask, did you watch the movie?
I did not watch the movie, but I might because I've never seen it.
It's wonderful.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I will
I mean,
definitely watch this.
caveat, I watched it. I haven't seen it in like minimum 20 years,
Yeah, but
but
I think it does, people like it. It has like held up. So it's the true story of a guy called Chris McCandless, who basically like gave away all of his savings, his car, all of his possessions, burnt the money that he had in his wallet, and like set off into the Alaskan wilderness, determined to live an independent life. And then within about 4 months, he was found dead in like an abandoned bus in the aforementioned Alaskan wilderness. So it's very interesting just about like this guy, why he did it, how he was living, the sort of speculation as to like eventually what did kill him. I just love Jon Krakauer's writing. I find it really like clear and easy to follow in general. I find he finds interesting subjects. Because the other book I read, I'll just do both my Krakauers back to back, even though I didn't read them back to back. The other one that I read, so obviously Into the Wild and Into Thin Air are both basically about like people making kind of unwise decisions in how they relate to nature. But the other one that I read this month was Under the Banner of Heaven, which was also adapted. This one was turned into a TV series a few years ago with Andrew Garfield. And like, the book is really good, but the crime that makes up half of the book is not really like, I don't really get why anyone was like, we gotta make a TV, a multiple episode miniseries about this case. Because what I think makes the book so interesting is like looking at this crime that took place within the Mormon world or like the fundamentalist Mormon community in the context of like the really violent history of Mormonism, that it's like a religion that has like kind of violent faith really baked into it at the extremist end. So yeah, it's literally like this book is a half of the book is like a history of Mormonism in America, where else? And then like sort of how that led up to this crime being committed where a man murdered his sister-in-law and his baby niece. It's a really good book, really interesting, and I feel like I am now the world expert on Mormons.
Someone has to be, and why not Bethany Rutter? I definitely want to read Into the Wild and Into Thin Air. I feel like both these things, the kind of the exploration aspect, I find very interesting. Not for me as a lifestyle, but as a tourist via the medium of books.
Yeah.
I think I'd have a good time.
What is your next read, please?
Next on my list, I have the first book, which I read in its entirety as a fresh read for me. It was still for an event, though, but I'm so glad that I read it. It's called Esther Is Now Following You by Tanya Sweeney. Are you familiar with this one?
Tell me again. You did tell me about it when we went for a little martini the other night. Tell me again for the pod.
I love it. We'll just drop that in. So chic. Oh, we were having martinis in Soho. Esther Is Now Following You is a novel about a woman who becomes incredibly intoxicated by a film star. He's kind of like a C-list, like she kind of bumps into him in the street. He's hasn't kind of risen to fame yet. She experiences a really awful trauma, which is very, for a book that looks superficial, like it's like a fun, silly novel about obsession, it has a real nuanced thread about trauma, grief, and the ways in which we kind of internalize as we process dreadful things, and how sometimes that can then end up coming out in strange ways. She becomes increasingly convinced, increasingly delusional that she will be with this man, that he is available to her. It's set in 2012, I think. So it's looking at that kind of early social media access to celebrity. That's obviously very different now because I think there's been enough examples of kind of stalking and kind of parasocial relationships that more celebrities now kind of don't run their own accounts. But back then they all fucking did. If you could message a famous person and they may well reply personally back. So it kind of shows how, yeah, early internet behaviors kind of fostered a parasocial potential between fans and their kind of celebrity crushes. It's really great. I really loved it. But the main thing as well, like, I mentioned that it has this like thread of very well handled, sensitively handled trauma. It's also genuinely really funny. Tanya Sweeney has such a way with words. And like at this event, she had me hooting and hollering. She is so funny. And I think that's what I loved about it. It really balanced that darkness with light and handled something about the modern world, which is still present today when in the kind of swiftiness of fandoms. It was like kind of like a little window into that early, the early development of that kind of those kinds of communities.
It
So
sounds
yeah.
fun.
You enjoy books that are obsessed with obsession. Esther Is Now Following You is one for you.
That sounds fun. So my next read is, if we don't count May We Feed the King, because I read it in January, my next read is probably my favorite thing that I read in February. And it was a young adult novel called Empty Heaven by Freddie Kolsch. Have you encountered this book, Alice Slater?
I haven't, I don't think so.
It is so good. I think you would really like it. I'm r recommending it to all who will listen to me. So it's a kind of like YA folk horror set on like the East Coast of America. I will just read you the plot. Darian Sabine Arden loves her family's summer home in the picturesque Massachusetts village of Kessaquash. It's where her three best friends live, and it's the only place in her life where she isn't haunted by reminders of the worst thing that ever happened to her. The village's belief in a godlike, benevolent scarecrow who protects the town only adds to the charming local color. But when Darian's magnetic mercurial crush, KJ, is chosen during a bizarre ritual on Halloween, Darian is forced to admit that good Arcturus is more than just a quaint, folksy superstition. He's terrifyingly real. So it's set in like the late 90s. So it's very like, it's got very good sort of contemporary color of the time. It's really, really dark. It is really weird. It's really fun. It's very queer. It's just an all-round banging book. It's very kind of like young queer Stephen King meets folk horror. I really am strongly pro this book, and I would like to read her debut, which is called Now Conjurers. So I'm now on the Freddie Kolsch hype train.
Okay, I'm into it. I'm intrigued.
He's vibing.
Like, I'm going to come away from this podcast with a list of books to buy, which is not normally what the hosts necessarily experience, but we always end up reading such different things, and that's why I enjoy recording with you so much.
So true, bestie. What is your next one, please?
So my next one, I'm just over the moon to have an excuse to reread this. I read Junk by Melvyn Burgess. And this was for Anna James's podcast, Book Wandering, in which she interviews an author about their favorite or most influential childhood or YA novel and how that book may have impacted their writing practice today. And I'd never really spent any time reflecting about what my early reading, how my early reading has, affected my writing. But Junk is a 1996 novel set in the late 80s about young runaways, like teenage runaways, who escape their kind of very, very limited small seaside town to the dazzling city lights of Bristol. And eventually, can they move into a squat and eventually get hooked on heroin? It's such an interesting, edgy novel. It was incredibly controversial when it landed. It won the Carnegie Award, and that was a big fucking deal because up to that point, this is the Carnegie is a children's writing award. They tended to go for things that were slightly more literary and sentimental, and then you've got this like punk novel like splattered with vomit, like it just
Trainspotting for children.
100%. It like and also it changed the landscape of children's publishing. It's often credited as being the first YA novel because the themes are very adult, but they're handled in a manner which, while is aimed at teenagers, it's never patronizing, it's never preachy, it's very real. And as a teenager, I think like thinking about Junk, I remember like kind of thinking about it was my introduction to punk. Like it introduced me to the Sex Pistols, it introduced me to the culture. And then the other really interesting thing about this book is I think it's the first novel I recall reading which has multiple points of view. And each point of view, the two main characters, Gemma and Tahar, are a couple that we follow from the age of 14 to 18. They have the majority of the chapters, but then we have a couple of recurring characters, and then also just a few peripheral characters that just maybe get one chapter. And each voice is so well formed. Like I was saying to Anna on the podcast, that you could remove the chapter titles, which tells you whose perspective it is, and you would know whose voice you're in. It is so well realized. And I think I really took that from quite a young age, like the power of voice on the page. And not only did it inform, I think, Roach and Laura in differentiating their voices in my debut, Death of a Bookseller, it definitely also was in my head when I was writing like the Bad Times Roll, which has multiple perspectives. So yeah, Junk, if you've never read it, it's never too late. I also found reading it now. So I'm now 39. The last time I read it was 2017. And then I've probably reread it at least one other time as an adult. I would have read it multiple times as a teenager. But this was also the first time I think I read it where I had a very emotional response to a certain moment in the book, which I will not spoil. I would like you all to experience it for yourselves. But there was one moment which I finally realized that I was closer in age to the mother of the teenager than the teenager. That would have been true in 2017 as well. I just didn't think about it. And yeah, it really moved.
Identified as a child in 2017.
I was still a minor in 2017. Yeah, so I just I found it really moving. I love revisiting books, but especially something that I've kind of grown up with, and finding new layers and depths and things to love about it. So yeah, Junk by Melvyn Burgess. If you haven't read it, it's never too late. If you have read it, reread it. Treat yourself.
Well, given how much I just spoke about how much I enjoyed reading a dark YA novel, I've never read Junk, so now's my time to shine.
You've never read Junk.
I've never read Junk.
Oh, Bethany Rutter.
I
I'm
bet
so.
my library has it. I bet I can get that
I'm
instantly.
over the moon. And also, this year, obviously, it was published in 96. This year is its 30th anniversary.
Love it. Can't
But
wait to
what a
read it.
great year. What a great year to read it.
My next read was literally one. Sometimes I go onto my Libby app and I'm just like, filter by audiobooks available now, sort by popularity, scroll past all the fucking junk, pardon the reference to the good book junk, but the actual junk that I don't want to read. I don't want to read The House Made by Freida McFadden. I don't want to read anything that looks like The House Made by Freida McFadden. And I just choose like the first book that is available to me on audiobook that I've heard someone mention. So on this occasion, I listened to Cultish by Amanda Montell. Do you know this book?
I read this book. I love this book.
So what I found so interesting about this book, unsurprisingly, was the section to so. I will return to this thought once I told you what the book is. So Cultish is a non-fiction book by Amanda Montell, which is sort of thinking about how the language of cults has like infiltrated contemporary life, that like we talk about we use like the language that cults use within organizations like workplaces and business, consumer businesses, but also that like things from the world of people experiencing cults have like filtered into mainstream life, like references to like drinking the Kool-Aid and the like. So that's what Cultish is. Would you agree that's basically what Cultish is about?
Yes, but I would say that it is also about more than just the language of cults infiltrating everyday, like the kind of everyday lexicon. It's also about how brands create their own kind of
Yes.
cult via language,
Yeah, it's almost like
such
the
as what CIA.
logic, not just the language, but like the logic of cults has like infiltrated our contemporary life. So, unsurprisingly, the bits that I found the most interesting was around like organized fitness spaces, like Soul. They talk a lot about SoulCycle, which is like a very big spinning brand in America that also operates here, and like how they sort of consciously create like cult-like conditions within the business for the consumers. But yeah, I'm really glad that, because it's one that I'd seen around a lot, because I think, many, it's quite a sort of accessible non-fiction book that was quite popular. So I'd seen other people reading it and I'd always been like, oh, I'll probably read that one day. And then it was, yeah, my audiobook, easily available audiobook while I was doing some cleaning. And I really had a good time with it.
It's one that I really recommend if there are any listeners are writers either in a kind of corporate copy space or if you write fiction, just the kind of elements of language, the toolbox of language that goes into creating community and persuasion almost. Really worth reading for that reason alone.
Well, I'm glad we've both read it.
Yeah.
What was your next read, please?
So this is my controversial one, which
Okay.
I will say, I'm going to say right now, I feel quite anxious. I never normally criticize books publicly. I think that despite being podcasters and, I love to share what I'm reading, if I don't enjoy something, if I hate something, I don't finish it. And therefore, I don't feel the need to discuss it. But the nature of the pod now is that I'm going to share more of the books that I start and don't finish. Not all of them. I'm not trying to ruin anyone's life or make anyone feel shitty. But I have a specific reason why I found this book difficult to read. It's called All Flesh by Ananda Devi, translated by Jeffrey Zuckerman. It's not out yet. I don't think it's out till April. And this book, in fact, I'm going to read the blurb. I don't normally, you may have noticed, Bethany likes to read the blurb from every now and again, whereas I don't because I like to, it's the bookseller in me. I like to give my own sort of summary, but I want to share exactly how this book is being marketed. Not to criticize Pushkin at all, obviously, just this is the copy that they're using to sell it. A child is born with an insatiable hunger. As a ravenous infant, she is her mother's undoing. Under her father's adoring gaze, her body grows and grows. Her father claims she devoured her twin sister in the womb. Her classmates delight in tormenting her for her size. And inside this girl, so alone and so enraged, another hunger is born for revenge. Bizarrely poetic and grotesquely humorous, all flesh is a twisted fairy tale that tears apart hypocrisies around beauty, gender, and a culture that relentlessly consumes the marginalized. Right.
Does it do that though, or does it just
Well,
perpetuate
I can't
really
comment.
nasty vibes?
I didn't finish the book, so I think that's really important. I didn't finish it. So, there may well have been something later on that would have maybe justified some of what happens in the first half. The other caveat I'm going to give is that, well, I'm going to give quite a few caveats because I'm a generous human being. Another caveat I'm going to give is that obviously it is a translated novel and Ananda Devi is not writing from a UK perspective. And I think that's also valuable to just remember that I'm reading this through a white Western lens. And then finally, my other caveat is that I do think that there is that it is bizarrely poetic. The writing is, I don't have a problem with the words on the page. I have a problem with the content. Basically, I as soon as I started reading this novel, I began taking photos of lines, which I think I sent to you. It just became very apparent to me that whilst rendering this kind of a character who is so fat, who is so massive, even as a baby, she is so huge. There were a lot of strange cliches that did not that don't really ring true. And I just, you know what? My little spidey sense was tingling, and I suspected that this is not a book that has been written from someone with like lived fat experience. And I believe I am correct, but it's not my place to comment on another author's experience. So I can only really focus on what's here. And what's here is just quite a lot of bollocks, to be perfectly honest. Again, another caveat is that the fairy tale comment, the kind of fairy tale reference in the blurb, I think that the book is supposed to be slightly kind of surreal.
Fantastical.
Yeah, definitely. However, we do have exact dress sizes in here. So we're not just imagining, like, we're not being asked to just imagine this kind of surreal, almost magical realist, larger than life character. We have exact weight, we have dress sizes, which is a massive ED no-no. It's inappropriate. Also, it does mean that I could tell immediately that I am the size of this character. She wears my dress size.
So you can instantly be like, okay, so the way she's obviously everybody has their own feelings about their bodies and whatever, but you know what the actual experiences are like. You know, we talked about one of her going on a plane
I was
and
about
how
to bring
she
that up.
was told that she was too fat to get on the plane. And it's
Yeah,
like,
the when they're putting their baggage, when they're at baggage drop, the agent is like, how much does she weigh? And her father's like, sorry, what? And she's like, how much does she weigh? And they basically the scene unfolds as they watch people of all different heights and sizes with suitcases of all different sizes just merrily getting on this plane, but they are not allowed on the plane because she is too heavy and it will be a danger. And I'm like, I have never in my life. I have. They give me a special seat belt. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and
I'm
it's like
on
there
the
are things about flying that are specific to a fat body, like the anxiety of getting on the plane and knowing that like people are probably looking at you thinking, oh, I hope she's not sitting next to me. Then you get into your seat and the seat is small, and then you do up your belt and the belt might not fit you and you might have to ask for a seatbelt extender. Like those are things that any fat person could tell you actually happen when you fly on a plane. The one thing in all my life on the internet I have never heard of is someone not being allowed to get on a plane. And it's like, that's basic shit. Like, if you want to write about like this stuff, at least like get the fundamental stuff right, because it just it makes me just think like, what interesting stuff could you have to say when you're not even talking about the interesting stuff that really happens?
And again, I feel like even if we are super generous and say, like, it's meant to be surreal, it's not meant to be a literal depiction of fatness in the real world, why am I being given numbers on a scale? Why am I being given exact dress sizes? Why are we pinning it into the world of the real while we are meant to be being fantastical? And as I said, I would never speak up about things like this. I honestly, I really was determined to read the whole book so that I could talk about it from a more
Informed.
from a more informed position. But it got to the point, I was about 100 pages in and I was like, this is going to do me some psychic fucking
Yeah.
damage. Like, why? I don't need to. This is a complete waste of my time.
It's not worth it for the pod. Don't do it for the pod.
And also, I'm going to say as well, we're in an era, we're in a moment where I mentioned earlier a lot of cannibalism novels. We also cannot fucking move for novels about female appetite. I was really excited to read one that is not from a white Western perspective. And I went in with a very open mind regarding what that content may be. And again, not to criticize novels about female appetite, because there's some coming out that I'm excited to read. There's some coming out that seem derivative. That's just the nature of the game. However, yeah, I think I'm very curious if anyone listening ends up reading All Flesh, whether or not you are a fat bitch like moi. I'd be curious to know if you feel that the end justifies the means. I'd be really curious to know because it's not a journey that I'm going to go on myself.
And when we
Thank
say the means, we mean mean, like horrible.
you. Yeah. Anyway, you know what? The thing is, I could actually go on so much more. I could read out more quotes. I could give more examples. I'm very happy to be corrected on this if it's really just my personal experience of moving through the world as a fat person and experiencing the genuine marginalizations that you will experience if you live in a fat body. But I'm not going to. I think it's a waste of our time. The end. Next book.
And I do think we've always tried to be very like fair. You know, in general, we avoid criticizing anything on the pod. And when we do, like the next two books I'm going to talk about are two books I didn't particularly enjoy. But I can understand why other people might enjoy them. Whereas, you know, it takes a lot to put either of us in a position where we feel empowered to be like, I did not want to read this because I feared it would give me psychic damage. And it's published by like a publisher that where we're like, oh, they do publish, you know, sane, normal things and maybe should know better.
And also, you know, actually, I do want to say one thing though. In Pushkin's credit, I think the cover is fucking stunning. The cover is a painting of a very curvy, fat body that does not look entirely dissimilar to mine, I might add, which is exactly why it appealed to me. I felt the cover is really bold. I love that they put genuine fatness on the cover instead of food, which every appetite book has food on the cover, obviously.
Yeah, because appetite books are never about fat women. They're always about thin women. Ever thought of that?
Exactly there. No, I'm not going to say. I was about to say something really mean. I'm not going to say it. But yes, exactly. Their books that ask the question, what if you were unhinged just by eating? This is doing something different, and that's refreshing, and I appreciate it for that. And I think Pushkin have published it in a really bold way that I really value. I would absolutely hang this painting on my wall. So, you know, don't let my perspective necessarily put you off if you are intrigued by these subject matters, but just slide
Appreciate
me a DM. Let me know
it.
what you think.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing those thoughts, my friend. I appreciate it. So, my next read was a book called To Rest Our Minds and Bodies by Harriet Armstrong. Have you encountered this book? I th
I was
must.
shaking my head then, and then I remembered it's a podcast.
Yeah. She was vaping while shaking her head.
You were not meant to admit that I was muted because I was vaping.
So I think I must have seen it on like someone's Instagram and thought, oh, that sounds good. Joined a queue on my library, got my book. It was all right. It's let me get the blurb up. It's, but this is quite a vibes-based book, so I would, you know, I don't even feel confident telling you my own blurb. Okay. In her final year of a degree in psychology and struggling to relate to the world around her and find her place within it, a young woman drifts from lectures on gifts, vision, the history of global warming, and study groups discussing babies manipulating objects. Yet nothing seems to bring her closer to the great insight she's been promised, except perhaps for her budding interest in a fellow student named Luke, a postgraduate in computer sciences with whom a series of seemingly mundane encounters provides her with a hint of what she might be looking for, a hidden meaning to all that surrounds her. but a chasm between them that grows and shrinks unexpectedly calls into question whether he might be as incomprehensible as the world around her. She yearns and continues to endeavor to shape her experiences and environment. A Louise Bourgeois exhibition, the underwhelming men she meets on Tinder, a Mitski song, the dream she has of Luke's ex-girlfriend. She narrates all as she grapples with questions of embodiment and subjectivity. It has some
Can I
interesting.
just say that while you were reading,
Please.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but while you were reading that, I'm connected to the internet via a hotspot on my phone to try and ensure that my internet doesn't cut out. Unfortunately, in the middle of that, someone we both know, a certain author, a certain editor rather, sent me about 10 messages in a row, and I think my phone got overwhelmed. So you cut out,
You
and so I
didn't
feel
miss
like I heard the
anything.
beginning, and I was like, this sounds like a book. I was like, global warming, sure, smart stuff. And then I came back to with a Mitski song. So I kind of have no grip on what the fuck this book is, but I'll just listen to the pod. I'll just check back in later.
Just check back in. Yeah, so I thought it had some interesting ideas, but I really didn't like the voice. I felt the ideas were really interesting, but yeah, there's just something about this that I just did not vibe with. It felt like kind of affect quite affected this kind of like flat affect vibe. Whereas, I think last month I talked about Practice by Rosalind Brown, which is also about like a female university undergraduate, and I found that so like lively and engaging and fun and interesting and thought-provoking in its like cleverness. Whereas this, it just felt, I felt really detached from it, and I did not enjoy. But I don't, it's not like I can't see why anyone would enjoy this book. It was just not for me. Did you have another book, or shall I just slide on to the...
No, I have one more.
Tell me.
And again, this is another book I've reread this month and also spent a lot of time in for reasons that will become clear later in the year. But I read a book called The Well by Elizabeth Jolly. Do you recall I messaged one of our group chats full of like industry people, writers, publishing people, that kind of thing, being like, has anyone ever heard of Elizabeth Jolly?
And we all said no.
Every bitch said no.
All of these women said no, including me. This bitch also said no.
So this is an author who is wildly under-celebrated in the UK. She's an Australian author. Well, she's based in Australia. She was born in Birmingham, my motherland. The Well is just an incredibly weird, dark novel about an elderly woman who hires a young orphan to be her companion on the kind of crumbling farm that she lives on. It opens with the pair of them that this is like 5 years later. They've been living in isolation together for 5 years. They're on the road together, driving home after a party. Catherine, the young woman, is behind the wheel and she is gabbing away. She's singing, like she's driving too fast. She's got a head full of champagne and she smacks and kills a man with the car. The older woman, Miss Harper, in her quick thinking, just the body is caught on the roo bar of the car. It's obviously set in Australia. She just encourages her to keep driving to the well on the property, and they dump the body down the well. And then what transpires is kind of half a telltale heart situation where they both become kind of consumed by this presence. But what I love about the book is it's so fucking gay. Like, Miss Harper is so in love with Catherine. Rather than, and this is like an unspoken love, you know, like it is a unreciprocated desire. And what she's seeing is as Catherine has grown up, she has started, you know, thinking about marriage, and the townsfolk are kind of talking about, oh, whatever will you do when Catherine meets a man? So what we have is essentially heterosexuality appearing in the middle of the night to disrupt their kind of lesbian harmony is the term I'm going to use. And they throw patriarchy down the well. And of course, things in water do not stay buried. I absolutely love it. It very much reminds me of like Caroline Blackwood. There
Yes,
are elements of like Shirley Jackson, elements of maybe even
Jekai Smith. Yeah,
Virginia. Yeah, Stephanie du Maurier.
this sounds so good.
Honestly, I think it is such an incredible book. It's very weird as well. Like, the Miss Harper's voice is incredible. She's a real bitch. Her language is just sticky and kind of mean. Yeah, I cannot wait. It's being reissued this year. So do not try and track down a copy now, because please just wait. Celebrate the fact that Virago are pushing this incredible novel and giving it a new lease of life in the UK, and buy their new copy when it comes out. But yeah, I'm really excited about it, and I can't wait for everyone to read it and tell me all their thoughts.
And you will not let people forget when the book is reissued later in the year.
Yeah. I'm going to be all over it. I'm going to be all over it like a rash.
It sounds so good. And it's so funny when you were like, has anyone heard of Elizabeth Jolly? I thought this was just like some bitch you didn't like. And no, I didn't realize that you were asking the group chat for like literary purposes rather than just like goss purposes.
That was intentional because I didn't want everyone to quickly go and Google.
Be like,
I was,
yeah. I know
yeah.
Elizabeth Jolly. I've read all her books.
And like so far, I've been asking lots of people who I would expect maybe would have heard of her. And so far, I'd say maybe only 2 out of about 20 have been like, I don't know any of her books, but I think she's Australian. And those two people happen to be a couple.
Okay.
So like, yeah, she is not, she does not exist in the kind of UK
Literally.
literary at the moment.
Okay, interesting. Okay, well, I'm definitely going to read that. Maybe I'll read it when it gets reissued. So my final read, which didn't particularly enjoy, but equally, you know, as with To Rest Our Minds and Bodies, I'm sure I know a lot of people like this book. I just did not enjoy it. Was The Wax Child by Olga Raven, which is based on a real Danish witch trial that happened in the 17th century, and which, you know, is something that I find interesting. That's like a thing that I theoretically like. I just did not enjoy the writing style of this book, and I'm once again in a queue on Libby for her other books, and I'm interested to read them to see if it's just that I didn't like this book, or if I just don't particularly enjoy her writing style. So that's my take on The Wax Child, is that not for me, did not like the style, but has not left me uncurious about her other work, because she seems like an interesting person who's doing like really varied things with her books, like thematically. So yeah, that's my take.
This one has been recommended to me so much. I went out and bought the hardback, and I hate buying hardbacks. Love to support an author,
Hate to
hate
buy
to buy
a hardback.
a
At least
hardback.
this one's less than 200 pages, so it's not going
That's
to be
why.
like, yeah.
That's why I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna go. And you were the first person who did not like it.
Yeah.
My bro who I trust.
Yeah.
I'm gonna read it. I'll check back.
Check back in because, yeah, like, I'm not going to go around telling everybody not to read this book. I just personally did not enjoy. And that will happen sometimes. We can't all like the same things or like look for the same things in books.
That's how we end up with Freda McFadden.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm feeling so cunty today. It's like midday on a Sunday. I've got a Diet Coke and my vape, and I'm just being an absolute bitch.
It's spice day on the pod. So that was my reading February. So we're now in March. So this poddy will, you know, going out maybe like 2 days after we would like it to, but that's okay. We're in March now. What's going on for you in March? Are there any events you'd like to tell our lovely, you know, that's the nice thing about doing this on a monthly basis is that we can actually tell you about like things we're chairing, workshops that Alice may be running, or like things like that. So what have you got going on in March?
So my March at the moment is beautifully light. I'm interviewing the author Sarvat Hassan
Oh, gorge.
in Spain. So I know what day I'm recording it. I don't know what day it's going to be released, but just follow me on Instagram if you're curious about that, or follow Sarvat.
So that's like an online event. So, yeah.
That's me interviewing about the novel Strange Girls, which is an absolute banger. And then I've also got at the very end of the month, I'm chairing Liz Allen, who wrote a really brilliant rock and roll book called In Bloom, and that's at Daunt's Notting Hill.
Oh, gorge.
How about you, babe? What you got on?
So on the 19th of March, I'm chairing an event at a very chic, cute looking independent bookshop called Funny Weather in Highgate. And I'm chairing two authors called Anna Brooke Mitchell, who wrote Mother Faker, and Rosie Story, who wrote Dandelion Is Dead. You're looking very excited about Mother Faker.
Yeah, because Anna is a hoot.
Okay, great. I love hoots.
I actually interviewed her for my Substack little plug. I haven't it's not gone live yet, but for Books of the Twist, where I interview authors over a cocktail. She's a scream. She's so interesting and fun. You're gonna have such a nice time.
And Rosie's story seems really cool and friendly, and I'm really looking forward to reading both of these books for the event later in the month. So you'll probably be hearing about them in a month's time when we're doing our March roundup. So that's what I'm doing. 19th, Thursday, 19th of March, funny weather in Highgate. Anything you'd like to tell anyone before we clock off?
Yeah, my final thought is don't forget to follow us on Instagram. We have our own little podcast Instagram called At What Page Pod, and I will post a little graphic of every book that we have discussed. So if you missed anything, if you want to double back and check what we discussed, it's all going to be on Instagram.
And we love you, and we will see you next time. Bye.